I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 114th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Caroline Sample. She was born and raised in Croydon, England. A teacher since 1973, Caroline has had classrooms in South London, Cameroon, and Maine. Originally, Caroline came to Maine in 1981 as a Fulbright scholar to teach at Waynefleet and came back a year later to marry her husband and raise three children here in Maine. Caroline also worked in the Old Orchard Beach School District and most recently taught English and social studies to English language learners at Lewiston High School before retiring in 2014. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Caroline.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, great. It's a dreary day outside, but quite warm and comfortable in here. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what Sundays might have been like in Croydon, England, where you grew up, what your family might have been doing on a day like this.
Yes, and of course, in London, which is basically where I grew up, South London, there are many days like this where the rain is on and off, but the sun does come through. On Sundays, when I was growing up, it was really a family day. And just as in many, many households at that time in the 50s and 60s, the Sunday lunch was a huge production. We would have a roast, which was actually called a joint, believe it or not, over there. And that would be beef or lamb or pork or occasionally chicken, which at that time was quite a luxury. And we would all sit around and eat lunch together, a big lunch, and then have dessert, which we call pudding. And I'm one of four children. We would go to Sunday school in the afternoon, and then usually we would either visit or be visited by our cousins and grandparents who lived about a mile away, and my cousins. My mother's sister had five children, so we were quite a crowd normally, and invariably it seemed to be somebody's birthday almost every other week.
Spaced them out.
Right. So if it was a birthday, that was a big deal, and we had birthday cakes and candles and so on.
And did you call birthday cakes pudding?
No, birthday cakes were definitely birthday cake, and they would be around 4 o'clock in the afternoon is tea time, and everybody would sit and have a sandwich, and a small sandwich, not like the American large sandwiches, and cakes and biscuits. And biscuits, of course, are called cookies here. There are some linguistic differences between the two countries, but definitely Sundays was a family day.
Yeah, I think maybe around the world tends to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you moved from England to New England, maybe mm-hmm. not as big a cultural transition as other immigrants have experienced. When you first came to the United States, what kinds of things struck you as different here and made an impression on you?
Well, definitely the first visual impression was the amount of space. Huge car parks or parking lots were something that I'd never seen before, and I still gasp when I go to some of the malls, just within Maine or outside Maine too, the fact that people really rely on cars so much. People don't tend to walk, although of course in the major cities in this country that is a little bit different. And certainly in Maine, the lack of public transportation hit me. And I've just mentioned some of the linguistic differences. Sometimes I thought I was asking for something, for example, the word biscuit, and something entirely surprising might show up. So that was something that I had to come to terms with and learn, certainly.
So were there other things besides the visuals and linguistics? Like as a teacher in both countries, did you notice any difference in the classrooms?
Well, I think that American teachers aren't shown as much respect as I had been accustomed to. Although, having said that, that's a very broad statement, and there are certainly schools in Britain where respect is certainly lacking. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I think, in general, in terms of the general culture, teachers here often get blamed for a lot of society's ills, and that isn't always the case in Europe and other countries in the world, certainly.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know whether it's because people always like to blame somebody else and don't want to take responsibility for themselves. I'm not really sure. Here, I think children are given much more empowerment, so that families tend to revolve around children rather than children learning to fit into the family traditions. And I think a lot of immigrants find this very, very difficult. If you come from Europe or Africa or Asia, children are expected to obey their parents in a much more definite way than tends to be the case amongst American families, I think.
I'm sure that's a big part of culture shock for a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
So when did you become an American citizen?
I didn't become an American citizen until I'd been here for 20 years, which was in 2001, in February 2001. I was able to vote. In Britain, we have proxy voting for 20 years after you've left the country, and that was how I voted. But then I decided that once I was no longer able to vote in Britain, and I had clearly made a decision to live here, my children were born here, my husband's American, so then I decided that I needed to vote in the United States.
So you vote here. What was your first voting experience like for you?
Well, it really wasn't terribly different from voting in the UK. The big thing that I think I notice is how many times a year we have elections. And I think one big problem here is voter fatigue, that people have to make an effort so often in each year to go to the polls and vote. And certainly in some areas now it's easier. You can do absentee voting. There's a little bit more flexibility. But still, and the number of different positions in society, and it varies from state to state, that actually the general population have to vote.
Elected officials,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And what do you think of our protracted presidential elections that last more than a year?
I think they sort of kill people's interest and definitely contribute to voter fatigue, and they're incredibly expensive. And I think that that really is detrimental.
How long do candidates run in UK?
Well, it varies, but the government in power has the ability to govern for up to 5 years between elections. They're not set at definite intervals as they are here. And the government has to declare at least 6 weeks only before an election is called. So it really is a very, very different kind of electioneering.
Yes. Less of a horse race, perhaps.
Right, yes.
You're listening to WMPG. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Caroline Sample. Not only has she had a meaningful career in education, but Caroline also serves on the board of managers for the Gateway Community Services in Portland. When you were teaching in Lewiston, Caroline, you said that every week new families were arriving from refugee camps. What were some of the needs that they had as students and as new community members?
Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard for Americans often to realize the conditions that refugees have been experiencing for years and years and years. They've left home under great stress because of fighting or famine or really horrendous circumstances. So when they arrive here, they're often very traumatized psychologically, emotionally. They've had bad nutrition for many years. They've witnessed horrifying things. Their language skills may be very rudimentary in English. Very often we had students who had never ever been to school and so were illiterate in all languages. And they have parents who've never been to school too, so they didn't understand what the culture of a school actually was. And that was very difficult for them. They were trying to fit in so many different ways and also dealing with trauma. So the problems were legion.
Yeah. So where would someone have gone for help with processing trauma in the past?
Well, in the past and still today, it's true that many communities members really don't talk about trauma. If they do, they might talk with their close family and friends. There's a lot of suspicion and concern about talking to people outside your immediate community about what's happened. And often not talking about it in a way is a way that people try to forget about it. They don't really realize that the damage is still ongoing internally. And there are so many stresses. Families are broken up. Families don't know where other sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, husbands, fathers, where they are, whether they're alive or dead. So it is incredibly complicated and very difficult to overcome. So agencies like Gateway that provide community counseling and help people access the resources that are available are incredibly important to try and help people who've come from the refugee or asylum seekers communities to be able to cope and to give back to their own families and communities and to the wider community of the host country where they're living.
So for listeners who follow along week to week, Abdullahi Ali is the director of Gateway Community Services, and he was on just a few weeks ago. And so Caroline is on the board of, not board of directors, board of...
Managers.
Board of managers.
Really the same.
Yes. And so she's talking about, again, what Gateway Community Services has to offer here in Portland. It's new. They just started last October, so less than a year old, and they are meeting a need in the community of helping immigrants and refugees with their trauma histories and getting on to a more peaceful and stable mental health situation here while they acculturate and work three jobs and raise children. And
yes, and pay back the fare that they borrowed from the U.S. government to come here.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. I don't think everybody knows that. When you're a refugee and your number comes up in the camp after 6 years, 10, 15 years of living there, you get a plane ticket.
You do.
And you get on an airplane, which probably has never happened before. And then you pay it back,
you
not
do.
Just for you and your wife, but also your seven kids.
That's right.
Which can take a long time to pay that back.
It's a huge burden.
It's almost like indentured servitude, isn't it? You come with debt.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And then you have to try and cope and try and find, as you say, those jobs, which are few and far between in Maine, as you probably know, to try and keep your head above water. In addition, people who come as refugees are always sending money back to the people who haven't been as fortunate as they and are still in the camps.
Yes, and just a little bit of money can really change the lives and the nutrition and the health and the access to education.
Right.
So having one person in the United States changes a family's trajectory.
Very much so.
They are very aware of that. That
they are.
You know, failure is not an option kind of concept. So most people who arrive in Maine as asylees and refugees have fled violent struggles. Do you know what your former students thought about the prevalence of guns here in the United States when they arrived?
Absolutely. They are horrified, as am I. It was a great shock to me, coming from a country where even the police don't routinely carry guns, to really realize how many guns are in existence in the United States and just in family homes. The attitude towards owning guns is very different in the rest of the world, I think. And certainly for refugees coming who've escaped violence, They're very often sent to huge cities like Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Hartford, Connecticut, and they're in the areas where the housing is very cheap, and they are suddenly thrown into an area where there is a lot of violence. And it's one reason why a lot of the refugees have come to Maine, because it is much safer. The levels of violence are safer than the big cities in the United States, but the levels of violence, gun violence particularly in this country, including in Maine, is still much higher than in many parts of the world, including places that are technically at war.
That's an interesting point to be made. When I looked up countries that allow guns, or, you know, the gun ratios and whatnot, I saw that there are many countries that where the citizens don't have guns, maybe mm-hmm. ones you would expect, like Norway and Ireland, New Zealand, but also some you may not expect, like India and some African countries. I saw that guns per 100 people in the United States, we exceed the number of people. We have, what, 113 guns for every 100 people mm-hmm. in the United States. And in Rwanda, it's less than 1% of people have a gun.
Yeah.
I think that would be a shocking statistic for a lot of people to realize, you know, we really have guns coming out of our ears here.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is so surprising to me is that there are no background checks, for example, done when you're purchasing a gun, and if you're purchasing a gun from an unregistered dealer of some kind. And there certainly is an issue on the ballot. Question number three this fall, which asks Mainers if they think that gun purchases should be subject to background checks in the state. And of course, states like Massachusetts do have much stricter rules regarding the purchase of guns. And we know that a lot of people from Massachusetts come up here and purchase weapons and then take them back there where they are used in criminal activity. So for people like me coming from a country where gun ownership is very, very minimal and where laws are very strict about where you keep guns, where you keep ammunition, it really is very difficult to understand why Americans are so willing to put up with the large number of deaths that occur every year. The lead story in the New York Times today is about a woman who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and was very severely injured by gunfire.
There are 90 deaths a day in the United States by handguns, and 9 of them are children accidentally mm-hmm. shooting off guns.
And to allow a child to grow up and know that he or she has injured or possibly killed another person when they were very young is just horrifying.
It's a burden that's difficult to imagine.
A huge burden, yes.
Yeah, and then they so often children who suicide use their parents' gun, which then is a burden to the parents.
Right.
They were trying to make a safer mm-hmm. environment for their mm-hmm. families. Mm-hmm. That was their thinking, and then they've made a more dangerous one for their family.
Right. And there is a difference, I think, between owning handguns and the weapons that are used for hunting. I know that there's a very strong tradition of hunting in Maine, and I think that is very different. But I do still think that people should be using those guns, storing those guns responsibly, and have a background check. It always surprises me that in order to drive a car, you have to take a test, pass a test, very carefully regulated, and cars do kill people, of course, but guns kill even more.
Yes. So question three on Maine ballots this fall is related to background checks and firearms. Can you tell us your thoughts about this measure and how people could learn more, perhaps?
Yes, I think it's very important, as I've already alluded to, that there are background checks done. One of the things that we've talked about and you're going to play at the end of the show is the song Imagine by John Lennon. He was a British singer, as probably everybody listening to this knows. And he was part of a very famous group called the Beatles. And he was in favor of pursuing policies of world peace. And yet he was shot and killed in front of his apartment building by somebody using a handgun. And just a terrible tragedy. And those terrible tragedies happen so often. So that's why it's so important to take the step to go to vote in Maine on question three to approve background checks being done on every purchase of guns, whether they're from a licensed dealer or from any other source.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. You know, the election is coming and it seems as if there's only one thing anyone's talking about, which is the presidential election, but we have five ballot measures to consider. And thank you for calling our attention to this one. Many other states have background checks. Our neighboring states have background checks. So why not Maine is your idea there. So being a teacher, you have always had an eye on cross-cultural issues and the welfare of children. Can you briefly tell us about your appreciation of the work being done through the Maine Wabanaki Reach program?
Yes, Wabanaki Reach developed after the state's Truth and Reconciliation Commission published its report to try and implement the recommendations of the report. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was looking at child welfare on the Indian reservations. A lot of people forget that in Maine we do have an indigenous population. There are four tribes, the Penobscot, Passamaquoddy, Maliseet, and Mi'kmaq. And of course, members of those tribes are human beings, just like all the rest of us. Members of the tribes can live on the reservations if they'd like to. They do not have to live on the reservations. But I think one of the big problems historically has been a lack of understanding and awareness of the culture of the indigenous population. And it was considered to be important by the social services workers in Maine at one time that if families on the reservations or families who were native weren't really allegedly coping well with bringing up their children, the children were removed from their families, from their cultures, and sometimes sent to boarding schools, sometimes raised by white families, so that they were no longer speaking their own language. They were separated from family members. They weren't living as native peoples. They weren't learning the spirituality that goes along with their own culture. And one of the most important parts, perhaps, of the native cultures is that they really respect and live in harmony with the environment. They don't try to harness and overcome the environment in the same way that perhaps the white population does. So there are lots of huge differences and traditions, and belonging to your own culture are incredibly important. And so Wabanaki Reach is a group of people who are non-native, white, black, brown, purple, whatever color, but non-native people who are trying to support the native population in coming to terms with what has happened and healing. And that's been very important, very interesting. And there are a lot of ongoing issues with native population in this country, and they've been subject to a lot of discrimination on a lot of different levels. And so it's really important that people understand their lifestyle, their values, beliefs, and spirituality.
I really appreciate you saying that, because to them, of course, we are all New Mainers. You know,
that's right.
And this project called the United States of America is new in historical terms. And yet we have managed to marginalize the original peoples.
So.
And,
yes.
And including, use the word genocide with that whole truth and solidarity and reconciliation talks, that it was a genocide. It was an extermination of a culture. And so I appreciate that you're looking in both directions, to the newest of Mainers and the oldest of Mainers in your comprehensive care for the place where you live.
Thank you.
Caroline, you are a very knowledgeable and compassionate person with a calm and centered presence. I imagine that those characteristics made you a fantastic teacher on all three continents. I really appreciate your openness to sharing your views today, and thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you very much, Kate, for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. Up next is Cruz del Sur with Victoria right here on WMPG. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Caroline Sample. Caroline, could you reintroduce the song that you wish to close today's program with?
Yes, we're going to listen to Imagine by John Lennon, and he has some most wonderful lyrics here for us to listen to. Thank you.
I love it. And I especially think I'd like to reiterate that point that you made when we were talking about gun violence, about the fact that people coming here from other countries have fled the violence at the hands of guns, and now they're here and looking for more peace.
That's right.
Yeah, so thanks to John Lennon and to you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Brotherhood.